गणपति गुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नुतिभिः सेदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः वेदान्तडिण्डिमास्तत्त्वम् एकमुद्घोषयन्ति यत् आस्तां पुरस्तात् तत्तेजः दक्षिणामूर्तिसंहितम् Let's meditate a little on what was discussed last week in class. Last week's verse was Dirigdrishyau dva padarthau staha paraspara vilakshanau Dirig brahma drishyamaya syat iti vedanta dindimaha. Putting out here that in our experience there are two, you can break our experience to a dipole. That's why we say dvaita, two things. One is the perceiver, subject, and the other is perceived or object. So any experience, any moment that I look at, I can see that it's the experience is made of these two. Observer, observed, perceiver, perceived. And in all the experiences, I've no doubt that I'm the subject. Even I say, that person did this to me, meaning I experienced something. I experience that this person did an action and this affected me like this. I experience the physical pain, I experience the sound, I experience the good thing from it, whichever it is. Still, I'm the drik, the perceiver. So I'm the conscious being, without a doubt. And what I perceive, one of the rules is it can't be the perceiver. This is an important point to look at. Anything within the field of perception is not the perceiver. Anything that I see is not the eyes, the perceivers of the vision, which is the perceiver of the colors and forms. Eyes can see everything except for themselves. So anything I perceive is other than me. So when I perceive my body, I perceive some sensations and I name it body. The eye is constantly there. Perceiver, what is perceived is there some of the time, changes. So I, aham, that which can't be destroyed, that which is ever present, is the awareful being, and whatever is perceived is changeful. And I'm aware of my inner state of the mind, the emotions, the thoughts. They're also changing. I, the observer, am constant. The moment I take myself to be anything within the field of perception, anything perceived, then I go away from myself. I adopt something foreign to myself, and then I feel that I'm something else, I'm the changing. And then I have to, through this viveka, vichara, keep bringing attention back to the fact that through each perception I'm the same awareness, same one. If I were changing, body and mind change, if I change along with them, I would be somebody different. But I'm always the same one. No matter what condition, what situation, I'm that same one. And anything I perceive in order to be perceived, it has to be changing every moment. Light waves, thought waves, it's a change. Something that changes means the change itself can't be the substance. Substance is something else. A wave isn't a substance, water is the substance. Sensation is some sort of wave. Hearing, some sort of wave. Seeing, thinking. Being a wave means it has borrowed reality, meaning it's not the substance, insubstantial substance is something else. So the substance must be something that's not part of the change. And within the field of experience, the only thing we can find like that is I, the awareful being. Unquestionably being sat and chit, constant, awareness, the sakshi. So this is something I need to look at again and again. Out of habit, identify with the body-mind. I keep looking at this again and again, clarifying for myself through this discrimination that I'm the unchanging observer, unchanging witness and consciousness. Shanti, shanti, shanti. So after clarifying what is being pointed out by the Vedantic vision, like this one prakriya, one methodology of Dhritarashtra Viveka, then one has to, the Shravanam, to really point it out. And Mananam, I need to be really churning in my mind to look at it, because what happens is it becomes an intellectual knowledge, but the mind, unless it makes sense to it, it's not going to adapt it. It's not going to do it. The mind has to really, when the mind is convinced, then it looks at it from that angle. Mind hears some things about it, it's not totally convinced about it. This is what happens. So the mananam is slowly to keep looking at it, so till the mind, using logic to really clarify for the mind that this is how it is, you know. If the mind was really convinced about the Dhritarashtra Viveka, then we'd be in a very different place. But the mind has so many other conditionings that it usually takes a little time. But we keep looking at it and slowly makes it more and more clear. We can think of many things in our lives that was pointed out to us by our parents, you know, could be, or, you know, more than them, probably all of our spouse says something and we don't accept. And after some months or years, then that specifically say, yeah, I guess they knew it, you know. My ego didn't want to listen, but now I see it's like this. You know, at least as a husband, I know I'm guilty of that. So what happens then is this, and then the Nididhyasana to really look at it from there, to look at it and stay with it. And Nididhyasana in this way, where it's being pointed out to me, is very helpful. And then one has to learn to sit quietly and just look at it by oneself like this. This is a very helpful thing. So this is slowly, slowly to make it clear, to keep looking at it like this, because it is jnanam, it is understanding, but, you know, it takes, because of our other habits, takes some effort to look at it like that, to keep looking and keeping this clarity because of other habits that the mind easily goes into without thinking like this. So to build up this type of habit instead, this type of not habit, but understanding, seeing from this way. So In the next verse here, he's saying like this: avidyopadhiko jivaha mayopadhika ishvaraha maya vidya gunatitaha iti vedanta dindimaha. Vedanta proclaims that Ishvara is indeed the supreme reality manifesting as the adjunct of the universal power, whereas the individual is the same supreme reality, same Brahman, reflecting in the limiting adjunct of nishence, of avidya. Brahman itself transcends the universal power, the nishence, and the gunas of the universal power. So interestingly, beforehand, talked about Driktrisha Viveka in brief, because each one of these is brief. Not a sutra exactly, but similar, where it's very brief and condensed, that in order to... It's not going to be a sutra. Sutras, usually, I'm not an expert, but usually, from what my understanding is, they won't be in a verse form. Because the sutra has to have the minimum words to really give the information, kind of like extracting the DNA, just keeping that. Just the minimal information. So the minimal information, everything built on that. So like I'm familiar with Raja Yoga Sutras and Brahma Sutras, neither of them are in verse form like this. Because otherwise verse form, you're now needing to go into, you know, put it into a certain form where in order to do that and just have the minimal words that are needed won't necessarily work, because you just need three words in order to say this. You need to add more elaboration to fit into the verse. So that's why it's not exactly a sutra, but it is still very minimalistic in the verses given here. Especially the way he put it where the author, where each one can stand on its own. So just to give the general gist. So an interesting thing, previous verse talked about Driktrisha Viveka, okay. So now says, okay, the Driktrisha Viveka, what is it helping you with? Why? Well, differentiate between you and your upadhi in this way. So very interesting how you can also see some connection. It's on the one hand, each can stand on its own, but also like a chain that each one can also build on the previous in some ways. So in any case, we say that I have an upadhi. Upadhi, I say my body-mind complex is the upadhi. Upa-adhi-yate, that which is taken to be near. Taken near, and then you take it to have some, you take on some of the attributes of that in that way. So, well, here's one thing with upadhi. Somebody wears something. Like, for instance, what is it? Somebody gave me some Odia, you know, Odia textile shirt. There's specific kinds of patterns they have. And I don't, you know, well, every 2-3 years somebody gives me, especially there's some program, you know, because my wife, one of her students does the Ranga Puja, so they want to give, you know, me something too. So a lot of times I get this one. So it stays in the closet, or I give to my stepson or grandson or something. So because somebody gave and their daughter's doing their Ranga Puja, so I wore it. So some of the Oriya community, oh, Orenbhai, they call me Orenbhai. Because my Orenbhai, wow, you're looking very good in this. Can I take pictures? They're like this. Now, am I the same, that upadhi, does that one have anything to do with me as the individual, as this body? No, it's an upadhi. Now I'm with the white one, then I'm with the colorful one. Now the colorful one's in the closet and we'll stay there till next Ranga Puja or something. So really it doesn't have anything to do with me. Nothing to do with this body, but the upadhi. Oh, now he's just wearing the usual, you know, white or gray things. Where is okay. Oh, now he's wearing something like this, but I'm the same one. So, as though some of those attributes went on me. But even more than that, the example always given, if you have something that's crystal and it's near a color, then suddenly it takes on that color. But does it really have that color? It seems to have that color. Seems to, but really, the color seems to give an attribute, and an attribute is limitation. Because, meaning, without the attribute, it has no color. Now suddenly has a color. So in the realm of colors, now it's given it some limitation. So it can be limitation many ways. Of course, the other example we give is the sky. Sky seems to be a dome, a blue dome. Seems to be. an interesting thing, it's blue, and when the water gets deep enough, it also looks blue. Very interesting. So Swami Dayananji said that's why blue somehow is the color in manifest world, is the color of the infinite manifest. Very interesting, because when it gets to something big, it becomes blue. So probably that's why, like Lord Krishna, they make blue. Same idea, the infinite. But in any case, so seems to be a blue dome. Seems to be. But it's not limited by that. Does the space take on that attribute of a blue dome? It doesn't. Just looks like it does. An appearance. So now, do we need to go and hire the best scientists to go up and remove the blue dome of the sky for us to see that the space is, you know, formless and colorless and this? We don't need to go. Somebody might want to go through all that effort and say, you know, there's been fake news here for generations. We found out it's not really blue dome like that. We need to remove it so that people's ignorance will go away about this. Knowing the you know, the way the human mind works, the herd thinking, and it's not just in this country, we see in this country, but every country, you have that on certain policies, certain things, you'll always have it. So, you know, they'll be able to raise a lot of money for it. And some cunning and smart people make a lot of money trying to do it, saying they're going to do it, and they'll run away with the money to somewhere. But in any case, you don't need to remove it. You need to understand that the space isn't really affected. Of course, here we have the nighttime, and the nighttime, it's, you know, we see it's not blue anymore, but still looks like a dome. So in this way, it's a matter of understanding, clarifying that that doesn't take that on in this way. So now here, clarifies about arupadhi, right? Dhrigriya shiriveka, me, and the body, sensation body, me and the mind. Okay, I'm the observer on that. But here it says, you know what your upadhi is? He says upadhi is avidya. It's the ignorance. Because what makes the sky, the dome of the sky, it appears, and I take it as a dome as long as I don't understand. The moment I understand, the appearance is there, but I understand it just to be an appearance. So what makes me take myself as somebody limited is my avidya, my ignorance, not the body-mind itself. Because, look, here's a nice story about that, a nice little story. That there is somebody who has a mental problem. Somehow he's gotten convinced that he's a cat. He thinks he's a cat. So he won't go outside because if he goes outside, the dogs might bark and attack him. So he's too scared, so he stays inside. So it took a while, but finally the family convinced him to have a psychiatrist come speak to him, and he had a few sessions and everything. And the psychiatrist uses reason with him. He brings a cat. He says, you see, the cat has this big bushy tail. Do you have a tail like that? Oh, no, I don't have a tail. And the cat has this and this, has the nails, you know, nails like that that come out. Do you have? No, mine aren't claws like that. So convinces him. He says, yes, okay, I agree. Thank you so much, doctor. You've cured me. I know I'm not a cat. There's no question about it. So the family's very happy. They say, good, let's go out and picnic then. You know, it's a nice day. It's winter, but it's got warm today. You know, we can go to Lake Elizabeth here. He says, no, I'm going to stay home. I don't want to go. Why? Yes, he's convincing I'm not a cat. But the dogs outside might not know that. So the knowledge is not complete. Still, the doubt about it isn't gone like this. So the identification with something identifies something, not necessarily something physical here, just with some sort of idea like this. Like here's something, an idea. My religion, what is my religion? It's an idea, right? If you go and you test the body, you scan the brain, all these things. You know, I have doctors go, you know, go, scientists go and test everything, and they'll see, can we tell the religion? They might be able to tell because of certain chemicals from intake. And maybe because of certain samskara in the mind that does, you know, they can tell by certain thinking, maybe. But in general, just the chemical makeup, there's no difference. It's something in my mind. It's an idea in my mind in this way. For the good, the bad, nobody's saying there's any, it has to be something negative necessarily. It can be something helpful, but still it's an identification in my mind. The negative, if it separates that this one is good, this isn't good, or if it binds me in a way, it separates, not a problem. It can be a problem. If it's something that helps me grow, expand, then it can be something positive like this. So this misunderstanding of identification is the avidya, that upadhi. Now what happens though is, when I identify as something limited, I have some identification on this individual. This is one point. This is one point again. So much of this, of these points on teachings of Vedanta, thanks to Swami Tattvedanandaji who's pointed them out, I've heard so much, is as an individual like this, we're always on the verge of sorrow, the verge of pain, always on the verge, because it just takes one incident to bring me to a situation like that. One small thing. And so that's the issue, is as an individual be like that. And so that's happens from the identification like this. What's going to be here? We have the my identification, for instance, as somebody who identifies politically. Then always following the politics. Oh no, now it's like this. Now pretty soon they might flip the house in this. What's going to come to our country and to the world in this way? Or the other way around. Some will say, wow, it's gaining momentum in this. Good, you know, we're going to take over and then we're going to put some regulations that we like. Get rid of those regulations we don't like. So it's true that for the good of the country and the world, some things will maybe work better, maybe not, but there's so many viewpoints. The one, and the other hand, it's also, if it's something can be flipped for the better, tomorrow it can be also flipped for the other way. Both, it can keep going both ways. So always there's effort like to keep the head above the water like this. And I can be now in a good place that, yes, I've gotten somewhere, but then that one is also short-lived because it'll also change in this way. So that's what happens. The individual always, it's always an insecure place. The individual is not a secure thing because the individual is something temporary there and fragile, and there will, you know, one small thing and then there's big changes. So this is the what happens like this as the individual. So that's what, with the identification with that, causes the issues. This is the problem. And through misunderstanding, I take myself as the body-mind through misunderstanding. Now, an interesting thing, the individual, obviously, individual product of we're all, you know, waves in the same ocean, so same kind of product of the same universal power. The individual, the universal product of Maya, right? In the Dakshinamurti Stotram, there Shankaracharya says, Maya Kalpita Desha Kala Kalana Vaichitra Chitri Kritam. So what is Maya? How does Maya manifest? Maya Desha Kala Kalana. This is one interesting point that from Einstein onwards, possibly other ones before, but in modern physics, he's known as the one that pointed out, as far as I know, that time and space are, you know, linked together, space-time. But here it says Maya is Desha Kala Kalana, space-time and causation, that they come together. Maya manifests, space-time and causation is there. So they're all power of Maya that manifest together. So it's, so of course, the more subtle laws of physics, slowly they will point out something's similar. They have to. They can't point completely because it's a different field. They're just working, just in the drishya field. They're not taking the drik into consideration in this way. But in any case, So what happens is these three are manifest because when I say I'm the physical body, when I identify with that, that's due to desha, space. Because what is form, meaning, some limitation in the space separate from the other parts. Distance is also form, the kind of form of this one here, this one there. You make these two forms are this far apart. So that's the space manifesting. Then the time manifests, I think. Thoughts are time. Because when the mind is quiet, like deep sleep, where is time? When you meditate, some of the time, you know, some of the time when the mind is running around, it's one thing. When the mind is quiet, you don't really know how much time. You can't measure time because the mind isn't there to see the time going by. So time then is manifest in the mind. And then kalana, causation, what causes them? Well, I must come from something. There must be a cause. And the cause you can't see because the cause not manifest. If the cause is there, it's different. But as you don't see it, it's because beyond mind, so subtler mind can't get to it. So unmanifest, the karana sharira. So all three of these are then product of maya, because we have kalana, kala, and desha all identify with them. So I'm this limited part of it, of that one. And then same with the whole universe. Whole universe, the universe, 13.8 billion years old, blah, blah, this thing. Okay, like this. And then universe is this big, and this expansion. They keep finding expanding. They're arguing because they can't, the tape measure doesn't quite reach the edge. So so trying to figure out how big it is. Still, seeing what physicists, you know, what they figure out is phenomenal. Amazing minds, what they do. Really amazing minds. An interesting thing about it, Vijay Kapoorji, my teacher, he said that years back, he was in Rishikesh and met Rishikesh or Haridwar and met Swami Taranandaji, one of Swami Dayanandaji's gurus. And when he met, said to me, no, it seems more people are studying Vedanta now than this. The Swami Taranandaji said, not really. He said that earlier times, his earlier days when he was younger, because this is some time ago, I'm sure he's not living, Swami Taranandaji. Earlier days, in where he came from in India, the more brilliant people, they would turn to Vedanta to study. But in this generation, you know, generation, you know, like my parents' generation or something, it would be, there from there on, they started going to IIT, right? They started going to becoming the engineers and scientists and this, because that opened up. So he said, not really. The focus now changed. So very interesting like this. But, you know, that the mind wants to, because the mind wants to go into. And it seems like something interesting, more practical approach in the modern times in this way. But what happens then is it universally then, those are there, the universe comes from something, the universe, you know, certain volumes, certain shapes, and this goes through some process of time. So all these things also the universal body as well, just like the individual body, the universal one. So I see mine in ignorance, and then the universal one seems to also be like that too. So we say then that's the universal power doing that. Maya is that. This is what happens. So, so then, what happens is, I see myself as this out of habit, and to change and look at it differently takes a lot to introspect to look at it, because I'm so used to seeing that in a certain way. I'm not to really look differently. It takes a lot of insight to do that. That really. It's not really the same thing, that I'm not that same one. This, it takes a lot to do it. It's very simple on the one hand, but not obvious that it is like this and everything. So then we try to get to something. We try to find our stability, to find our contentment, and all this. And then we try through our limited things, and we say, okay, there might be some unlimited one. Let me get the grace of the unlimited one to help me with that. The one who is, you know, all powerful in and through all of this. The one who is all knowing. The one who is all happiness in this way. We say the universal one like this. We take the idea of the universal God. We strive to find it there. Now, some people, they strive and they build tremendous faith in, and it gives them a lot of strength to face things. This is one thing. Actually, through scientific studies, they've found that people that do have a faith like that, it helps with the health because less psychological problems, and helps with longevity because it takes a lot of stress away. It's a wonderful thing. But what happens still is one will say there's the God and there's me. So there's that one. The God is still the other. Since it's the other, then, okay, I'm befriending, I'm getting on the good side of the God, and then God is helping, taking care, so I'm okay in this way. When God remains the other like this, then that separation's still there, meaning that things won't always necessarily fall in place how I would completely want. I try to surrender, but I won't have the 100% surrender because there's still me, the individual, and I will have some preference of some sort. And then if things go too far in one way, there aren't as good chances that I will, you know, I'll complain to the God then, you know, still, that's bhakti. Okay, I'll complain. Why are you doing like this and everything? So it has its place, but still remains as the other. So still, there is some level of insecurity. If somebody had total faith, like they give in different stories, okay, God did like that, so no problem. So then, but still there is some idea of the separation in this way, because still I see God through the upadhi of the all power, all this. That still is an upadhi in this way. What happens is, okay, so in that Ishvara then is the, right, Srishti Karana, Stiti Laya, creates everything, sustains everything, and everything goes back into, obviously. Now, in order to do this, universal power needed, so Maya is universal power. So good, so through Maya, it's all done. So now, meaning, the God is behind all this power, wielder of this power to do it. Now, what is this Ishvara then without those powers? Because just like I have a certain ability, and I'm the one with or without that ability. If it's manifest, and if it's unmanifest, I'm the same one. If I lose that ability, I'm the same one. I'm not a different person. Maybe I mentioned in this specific class about the dancer who is here, the son of the famous dance guru, in this way. So this one, I have no idea that, you know, that he can dance. And then the moment he was just saying something and doing it, I said, wow, it's phenomenal. His wife is the one who performs. He's a lawyer, and he teaches and choreographs, but because then, as I thought, of course, he's the son, he grew up with it at home. That's all his father did, who was the master of one of the greatest master dancers from Odisha ever. And then, you know, and he learned till he was 18. Then I found that's, so, you know, it's a natural talent plus training in this. So unmanifest, manifest, with or without, he's the same one in this one. So take away the Maya, those powers. Where is it left? Like this. So we're always just trying to see through the upadhi, but the Maya depends on, just like my power depends on me. If he never dances, he's the same one. If he goes and dances, same one. The power is not separate from him, but the power doesn't have its independent existence. So the Maya doesn't have independent existence, manifest or not. There's the one. What is that one? In this way, that's a way to look into, because if I look in just the upadhi, I just see what seems to be in this way. Drop the desha kala kalana, drop creator, preserver, destroyer, what is without all of this. Now, one nice thing is when seeing the God as the Ishavasamidam Sarvam in this way, the one power, one who's behind the power of this whole creation, it takes all of these things, all of the manifest parts, consolidates them into one thing. There's one behind it. So it helps to remove, make the upadhi a little bit more transparent. There's one there. One presence. I look at the world, one presence through it. Before the world's there, of course, this presence there. World is here, it's there. Whatever happens, that same presence is through everything, just like the H2O through the waves and through the everything, the water. So that simplifies where there's one like this. This really helps. This really helps take one a long way, away from just seeing there is the, that there is the, you know, the God away from me in this. Where is it? What is in this? In some place. Conveniently, a lot of religious ideas put the God somewhere far away. You know, it's Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, but he likes to spend most of his time in Vaikuntha, and that's so far away, it'll take a long time for us to get there. Like this, so, sitting somewhere. How can the all-pervading one be there? Oh, somehow like this. Somehow he's there, you know. And we'll have to, and we can, Narada, sage Narada can go there, but we, you know, we have to be very pure to go there in this way. But the name itself means all-pervasive. As a lot of the Mahatmas say, that the mistake we have is not the Vishnu, that there is Vishnu is fine. There's no Mr. Vishnu, no entity, limited, some entity with some attributes sitting there called Vishnu. Vishnu means the all-pervasive, in and through everything, not just one place, Vaikuntha. I forget the exact terminology what Vaikuntha comes from, but I think it means that which is present in everyone. I think so, but just from my weak memory from some previous classes that comes, so it could be incorrect, but it's something of that sort. So now a nice thing is if you look at, okay, the one presence in and through everything. Okay, there's one presence there. Very good. Now, I look at myself, right? I look at myself, I'm the observer, meaning I see that I'm aware. Meaning there's some sort of presence which I am. I'm aware, so I'm a presence. Now, a very interesting thing when you start looking at it like this, you say, okay, I'm the presence. I'm aware of the body-mind, I'm present. I'm aware of outside presence, so I'm the presence that is common through my experiences. You start looking at it like this. And then you start looking, okay, there's one presence that I'm out the outside. Aham, I is one presence. Everything else is Ishvara, one presence. Now, you see, suddenly you're down to presence and presence. Now, are there two presences there? You know, it's at first it'll seem like because I look at the upadhis, at the differences, my mind looking out there, from my body I'm looking out there. A little bit meditation, sometimes you feel there's no inside and outside. So what do you mean inside out in this? And mind, you know, mind just is some nice instrument, a nice, you know, iPhone, you know, 1032X, like this. Now they're in 10, so I won't get a few more generations. So when you start looking like this, then you say, Ahamasmi, I am, and Idamasti, this is. If you start looking at what it means, I am, you know, presence. So I am or I is. Why do I say am compared to is? Really, it's presence that I am. Outside is. So with a little bit of, if we look into a little bit, it's not, there's isness and amness. That's just an idea, that's where do you put the is, how do you separate isness and amness? you do it as long as I'm seeing from body and mind than this. But just as me as awareness, I cannot, you cannot have the two. The two seem to be two different things, seem to be. But they're not really two different things. So, but as long as I take any other attributes and put on top of it, of course, then I'll separate, because I'm physically up to the skin, the mind up to where the mind can go, everything else external to it. So this is this way, when you make the upadhi more transparent, then makes it easier to bridge that gap, if you want to say that gap. What is the gap between them? The gap is avidya. Right? What I am in my mind is just an idea. Ahankara, the ego, is an identification. It's an idea in the mind. That's what it is. What's more than that? Drop that, and then where's the difference? So there, when looking at this, how to disidentify the difference in the upadhis in this way, there are two main methodologies that are used in Vedanta, two main ways to look at it. And again, models are very useful, because the models are explaining something in a way that makes it a little easier for the mind to perceive, and it just is a way for us to explain our experience. Meaning, it's not that it works exactly like that, but it's a very good way for us to understand the experience, similar to the model of the atom. You know, where, you know, they even say electrons aren't really a substance in this, but to explain the atom, they make the model, and then small kid can say, oh yeah, this is going around the middle, and then just to explain it. So same way, explain our experience, and then it helps us to see through it like this. So one of them is the pratibimba, seeing as the pratibimbavada, they say, the reflection. This one we've talked more than the other one, the reflection. You see that, yes, in the small broken glass, you know, there's a broken mirror, there's a small reflection. You can see the, you know, tiny, tiny reflection of the sun sitting there, like this. Or you see a huge reflection in the ocean, you go up to the, you become one of the people that pays, you know, what is it, 20 million, 50 million, whatever the price is now, to fly up and be up in the sky there for a short time. Probably a phenomenal experience, but still you go up and do it. And up there you see, wow, the sun is huge sun reflection, the totality. Still the differences in the medium of reflection. So the presence reflected in the totality is the Ishvara, full. In the small speck, it's the individual. But the difference is in the reflecting medium, the upadhi, not the original thing reflected. So this is one way. Presence in the totality, presence within my body-mind. And then what is really there is a reflection, and just because I'm looking at the medium, it seems different. All the changes, all the limitations, this are due to the medium, not to the one being reflected in it. So this is this pratibimbavada, one way. The nice thing about it, it gives a very nice, very clear explanation of it. Very nice in this way, and that there's just the one behind. And the sun is a very good, proxy for Atma, because everything's seen in the light of the sun. One source of light, one source of energy, center of our, you know, our little home of the solar system. Our little home that only, you know, one or two spaceships have gotten to the edge of it, but it's our little home compared to the universe. But the one thing about it, though, is for this, the sun has to be separate from these mediums. That's the one thing about this model to be aware. Just like those electrons, you know, ping pong ball, you make a model, a ping pong ball is the electron, a blue ping pong ball, compared to a pink one or something in the middle. But then later you learn, well, the ping pong ball, it's not really a solid thing. So here also, it's not something separate from. It seems, Dhritarashtra Viveka, at first it seems like it's something separate, at first. But with analysis it isn't, but that's the first step. So here for that, this Pratibimba Vada is really wonderful, and then, but it starts from that you need it to be separate. The other way to look at it, which is very helpful, is Avachinna or Avacheda Vada, Avacheda of limitation. This one also gives a very wonderful illustration of this. It says, okay, of Ghatakasha, Matakasha, I think they call it, and Mahakasha. So let's say we have, I'm sitting in the room here, and I have a small pot. When I was now in the ashram there in Pennsylvania, there's a nice thing now that they have the new hall, the stage, and there's a place for the Swami to sit and give the talks. And then, so they have like some small shelf or something around it, because I would move it to the side after the class, because somebody was teaching a Sanskrit class under the Swamiji, then they'd move to the side so they can use the projector with the screen in the middle. So I'd move it, so then I saw there are a few items and things they have on the inside on the shelf. There are quite a few pots there, because I guess they have pots in order to take and discuss about clay and pot. Like this. So let's say I took one of those pots and I'm holding it here. So there's space in the pot. Ghatakasha, a certain amount, there's space in here. Then there's the room space. Also bigger space, much bigger, more expansive space. And Mahakasha, there's universal space like this. So Ghatakasha is going to be, the Ghata is me, clay, right? From dust to dust, as they say, the we go, but my body comes from dust and goes back to dust. Some scientists, we're stardust, that's all that we are. So this way, that's me, my upadhi, and that's little me with the little pot that I have to be very careful and afraid, because if something goes a little bad, it can chip and I have a lot of trouble. So same way, you know. Here in this world, one little thing can go wrong. When people get old, they have to be very careful because they slip and fall. A lot of times they, you know, break a bone. It can be very dangerous. So I want to be very careful not to have my upadhi here disturbed, because I want to stay intact. Then you can have maybe it's in a huge, the fanciest, largest room of the king or temple like this, you know. If you go someplace, I'm sure they're bigger and fancier, like in Rome, but I remember when I was in England, what is the big cathedral there in London area? I don't remember, but this huge one, I went and just, your mind is blown when you're there. How huge the dome is, it's amazing. And that's probably why they make religious places like this. You go and it's just, you know, you find something phenomenal. So if that room is this little room here, but that huge fancy cathedral, the room space. So that's the upadhi of Ishvara. that's what a temple or church is, upadhi of Ishvara. Now then, what happens is I feel I'm this small limited one, and this Ishvara is this real big one here. Now what happens if that I take that pot and I drop it and I break the pot breaks to pieces. Where did the space go? Oh, it merged, became one Ishvara. Right? Like one name, there's one block up, Haryani elderly couple living there. Their son lives nearby and he has an office in their house and he works in this. And they're elderly, father's in his 80s. Father just passed away. I just found out because he was a few weeks ago. He'd been sick for some time. Very nice. I was speaking to the son. I happened to see him today at the farmer's market because I didn't know his father passed. And last time I saw him when he was sitting outside, he really wasn't looking well. He said he's very happy. He's meditating. His wife, son are taking care. He's very happy. And like that, when he died the last few days, he just wanted to meditate. They go to some satsang, some group here in satsang all the time. So nice. What a nice place to be in when passing away like this. So his son said he feels okay. How, in order to help himself, he says he sees his physical father has merged with his spiritual father like this. Very nice. So here, Ghatakasha is merged with the Matakasha. But did it merge with it? If it merged with it, then it was separate from it before. But it never was separate. There was an idea of separation, but never was separate. And this Ishvara is the huge, amazing thing, but still, because we put some walls around it too, right? That the temple, if you take away those walls, oh, how even more amazing. This whole universe, the whole space, that's really the cathedral in this way. So really infinite, endless, unfathomable. So we take the limited ideas of these, but if we drop those limited ideas, then what? Where's, there's just one presence. So, but because it's so subtle, and because I'm so used to and I'm so comfortable with these things, then I don't. Look, here's something that the human mind would do to show how much we hold on to our upadhis. Somebody has a quarrel, doesn't agree with somebody this, right? Takes a while, finally gets resolved. Okay, everything's okay. How long will it take till they find something to have a disagree with somebody else on something else? Kind of like, look, our Islam friends, you know, there's fun, you know, a lot of fundamentals, this fighting other religion, this. Let's say in a certain era they got rid of, there's no other religion, just them there. Okay. Now the Sunnis and, what is the different sects are going to fight. Now plays just one of those sects. What's going to happen? And I just pointed out, you know, Islam, but meaning human mind, because it'll happen everywhere. Here it'll be Democrats and Republicans, and look, the Democrats are majority. Now within the Democrats, different streams, they can't get anything done because the different streams are arguing. Like this. This is just reflection of human mind. So we want to comfortably hold on to something, samupadi. So we have to watch our own minds, watch how they are, because it's something I have to learn my own mind. Like example I keep giving, because I can watch my, you know, my upadhi in my mind is, you know, being locked down on this. So you end up watching some more, what your mind likes to watch in this on YouTube or whatever. So growing up, then in Israel, which is a tiny country, and years before we stopped going to Asian games, the Arab countries didn't want them there. So Europe accepted, they go to European sports events. And Europe is in sports, one of the top in the world in many sports. And then Israel plays the basketball there, the champion each country playing. And then when I was a kid, one year, the Israeli team won the championships. Wow, it was just unbelievable. So now when I sit here, so start watching on TV. So, okay, so sports I never watched for years. I watch some sports now, start watching local team. Oh, they're very good. Last year, not good. This year, good. So that samskara comes in. Now as a local team, am I going now to identify with them? They're just like there, because same kind of samskara. Many basketball teams play. Okay, so now I'll identify with one. So now I learn myself again, this against the others. This team better be good this year. Where does, so in this way, we look for the identity with something like this. Instead of breaking the identities, because the spiritual practice should take us to helping to break those limitations. And then that's why the upasana helps to a certain extent, like this, to bring up till there is one thing in and through everything, one God behind, but then to drop those attributes, as long as it's an other than me, that otherness is an attribute that will keeps my limit, my comfortable limitation there, the otherness. So I have to shift. The less I see myself as something limited, then the less I have my identification, my upadhi, and slowly also the God is not going to seem limited to an upadhi also. So the upadhi at first religion useful, but then that's very preliminary. Slowly I have to see I'm not, I have to look at myself, my vichara. I see them that's limited, then how can my God be limited in name and form like this? So these are a few points on this. which we have to be aware. So of course the Dirikdrishi Viveka helps very much with this. Great step in towards this. Another thing very helpful for it also is what happens is very easy just to sit there and say, I am there, regardless whether the mind is there or not. And I can say I have the deep sleep and I can recollect my deep sleep, there is nothingness. But one thing is that's a vague recollection. But with doing a little yoga meditation, very useful for this, in that if I can quiet my mind some of the time, then I can see I'm there without, whether the upadhi is there or not, I'm still there. Because the mind is a strong upadhi identify with. So again, the quieting the mind is not for the experience sake necessarily, but more for analyzing the experience. And then the experience is, yes, I'm there, no thoughts in this. And then I'm the same one who is there with the thoughts. So meaning those thoughts aren't intrinsic. So they have to be an upadhi. Otherwise, how would I be there without them? I'm the same presence with them and the same presence without. Seemingly changing, but not. So this is where some meditation in this way of quieting the mind is extremely helpful. Very helpful, because without that, it's hard, it's, again, we don't have to remove the upadhi, the sky upadhi, but if it was never dark, it would be much harder to convince people the sky isn't blue. Very hard to convince. So this way, it's much easier to convince the mind, because one knows one is there without the mind too. And when one then slowly looks and the mind gets a little movement, I'm still that same one. And then the time when I'm very caught up in, harder to see, but a little easier to accept it, because you know you're there whether the mind running around is running around or not. So this is one other thing which is extremely useful for this. I know in some Vedanta teachers are very much against quieting the mind and everything, what needed, but every tool, depending what you use it for. You use it for, I want to refine it more and more, I want to get subtler experience, then it can lead one a little bit astray in the way that I will just be refining that more and more instead of, and not doing vichara. But here, as a tool for vichara, it's extremely helpful in that way, that then you know what it's like without the enclosure of the pot. Pot knows what it's like without, and then understands the enclosure's there, I'm still that same space through directly looking at it, not just through, conceptualization, we can say. So that's one other thing that can be extremely helpful for this understanding in this way. And then what happens then, I see also that there's one covering, whether for myself or covering for the universal like this. That's also just, it's my understanding. It's not that the poor Ishvara is there hiding behind the Maya in that position. It's my understanding that Ishvara has no problem. I'm the samsari who has the problem. So my understanding, I see that. I see the snake. It's my problem that I need to rectify. Like this. So these are a few points or thoughts on this one. Very beautiful one. And interestingly, that now in our Thursday class, we're doing the short chapter we started, it being the Mahavakya Vichara. This is Mahavakya, but it expands it one step more. Mahavakya is like the sutra, at least the ones we're seeing are like sutras. Just Prajnanam Brahma, the individual consciousness, the universal one, same. But here, pointing out what makes them seem different, that the upadhis are seeming different. So that's in this verse, points out what makes it seem to be different. The Mahavakya will be very terse and doesn't point that out. But here expanses say, look, this is what makes the difference seem to be there. Understand that, and understand it's not. It's just an upadhi, it's not really what's there in this way. So that's a few thoughts on this verse. And as I mentioned at the beginning, I don't know if Rupa was already in or not. We didn't see her. At least I didn't. Then I take these earlier in the week. I take look at notes I took on studying this, and then I reflect on it during the week. So just taking one verse like this, it's, you know, like, you know, so the superfood. You eat something that's very, gives you a lot of nourishment. So take and you keep thinking about it. Oh, it's so wonderful. And then that's the nice thing about this Vedanta Dini. You might take one, reflect on it for a while. Wow, can give so much insight. Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.